your place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both run Friday, June 2nd, on a card that also includes four Pennsylvania bread stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 17th. Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half on this Tuesday, day two of Derby coverage, pre-Derby coverage, but it's, you know, it's Derby. It's 24/7 when it comes to the coverage. It's just the only race of its kind, and certainly somebody that has loved it and delves into it deeply even before the launch of his Thorough Pace concept. Tyler Wissman back with us. Ty, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm terrific, and you're all in, right? You're working on morning lines. You're working on the pace cast. You got it coming and going.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it takes hold, you know, a few weeks out. Try not to get, as most people, I'm sure, try not to get too married to selections this far out, but definitely think that, you know, there's some valuable information that a lot of people aren't familiar with, and do my best to try and share some to educate others, because I've certainly learned a lot through the years from yourself and others.
Hey, you know, I don't know if you were able to listen to earlier portion of the show, but I floated that concept to Kevin Kirstein that in absence of, you know, really dominant 9-furlong performances. There were some good ones, and we've got, you know, three horses with triple-digit buyer figures coming in. But it really feels like there's nobody that or you know, fewer candidates that, you know, really have grabbed people up till now, and it just feels, because of that, Ty, that, you know, people are looking for, you know, kernels of information and you know, attributes with this cast that might be enough to latch on to make a key. I mean, and it certainly feels like, in absence of a dominant favorite, that there's going to be good, you know, good pricing for whoever anybody wants to key.
I couldn't agree more, right? I mean, not to make everything about pace, but I do think pace is important. And as I map out, you know, as you mentioned, thorough pace, we've kind of taken a historical look back, right, like at the prep races, but are also to the point now where we're trying to project the pace going forward in the actual Kentucky Derby next week. And so with that, like, when you look at the top three choices, or at least the three that I think will be the top three choices, when you have Forte, Tappet Trice, and Angel of Empire, I have all three of those at the back of the field, right? And so, you know, I've kind of lumped it into five groups, if you will, and all three of those being at the rear. I think all three of those are going to get a ton of support, but all three are very much trip dependent, as well as pace dependent. And I think that that's probably why people are struggling, including myself, on, you know, quote, picking a winner or, you know, having a derby horse. So for me, I'm more, at least for this derby, and kind of changing up my style from past years, trying to figure out where I can find value underneath, because I'm finding it very difficult to separate the top contenders on the win end.
Let's establish a couple of things, you know, because chances are we'll talk again next week when the time comes for final decisions. But what have you ascertained so far with some of the early analysis?
So I think, again, if we use thorough pace, and again, which is a pace product, and if we just to orient listeners that may not be or probably are not familiar, we basically create a pace forecast for races that ranges from minus 35, which would favor horses that have speed, to plus 35, which would favor closers or stretch runners, as we refer to them as. And so with that, there's obviously we assign a pace figure after races, and you can kind of take a look at the performances and see where horses were relative to the early pace to see whether they may be, you know, you need to take a skeptical view of them, or perhaps you could upgrade them. And so you don't really need to go outside of the Todd Fletcher barn for me to demonstrate basically three different concepts, right? So if we look at Forte, there's actually nothing, in my opinion, that's remarkable with him from a pace perspective. Now that's actually probably a good thing, right? Like if you look at the Fountain of Youth, on our scale, the Fountain of Youth received a minus six. So that, you know, if I'm handicapping a race with a minus six rating prospectively, I'm looking for a horse that's going to be forward. He was fifth early, about two lengths off the leader in the Fountain of Youth, and clearly got the job done. Conversely, in the Florida Derby, it was a plus 22. So in that case, you're looking for stretch runners. In that race, he was ninth early, about six lengths off the pace. And so again, he's fairly adaptable, in my opinion. I think the issue with him is, are you going to swallow that short price for a horse with his style? That quite honestly, you know, pace being one thing, but he really doesn't have any sort of dramatic, if any, figure edge on the other runners. So you then move to King's Barn. I think he's having a lot of support in doing so because of he's relatively unexposed. He's going to be forward, although I would say probably not on the lead in a race that lacks a clear front runner. But we have the Louisiana Derby, as many other folks do, as being quite slow. So it received a minus 26, which would very much favor horses on or near the lead. He set the lead and was able to hang on. Perhaps there's more upside there, but in our parlance, if you will, we would be skeptical of him. So he was pace advantage in that, and it is unlikely that he will get the same pace advantage in the Kentucky Derby. Clearly, it projects to be way faster than a minus 26 that he received in the Louisiana Derby. And I'll come back to the Louisiana Derby in just a minute, but just following through with our example in the Fletcher barn, then we go to Tappet Trice. So if you look at the Tampa Bay Derby, we have that as a plus 25. He was 11th, you know, basically dead last, nine lengths off the pace early. So clearly got a setup for his style. So nothing remarkable there. However, if you go to the Bluegrass, we have the Bluegrass Stakes as being a minus 14. So if I'm handicapping a race and see a minus 14, I'm looking for a horse that's in the definitely, you know, either on or very much near the lead. Well, he was seventh, which was actually closer than he had been in his previous races, but he was eight lengths off the leader in the Bluegrass Stakes. And so when you take that into consideration, the Bluegrass was a pretty remarkable race. And one that I think, you know, Tappet Trice may actually deserve a little bit more credit than he deserves. You know, the other horse that I'll mention in that race, obviously, is Verifying, which was much closer to the pace, just off the leader, did the pressing, couldn't hold off Tappet Trice. But I don't necessarily want to completely dismiss Verifying because I know he will be more forward, and he clearly projects to get a much better trip. So Anyway, I'm trying to demonstrate, you know, I quote upgrade or downgrade based on our thorough pace methodology looking back. And again, all of that has to be put into context of what do we expect the pace to be in the Kentucky Derby.
Well, and I don't know how much distribution of the grid, you know, essentially a pace cast with the, you know, the leader, the pressers, the stalkers, the rear going, and then the deep closers, the trailers. Have you circulated that?
Yeah, so I will circulate that. I would say tonight, right? So we're still trying to, in full disclosure, figure out a way to objectively handle both Continue R and Dermasotagake. So, you know, I think clearly based on the UAE Derby, Dermasotagake is going to have a say in how the race is run from the pace perspective. So we want to try to make sure that we get that right. Without factoring him in, our current, you know, pace forecast is a plus 21.7, which again is not blazing fast, but definitely skews towards favoring stretch runners. That doesn't mean that horses that aren't forward can't win. But something to note. So I do expect when we figure out what to do with Dermasotagake that it's probably closer to that plus 25, plus 26 rating. And once we have that, I will definitely circulate it. Now, what I have done is I've taken sort of where our pace points and how we assign pace points, which will admittedly be impacted slightly by post position. But nevertheless, I've tried to bucket the horses into five groups and can definitely send that out. And we'll do so, or at least try to later tonight. So, you know, based on our thorough pace, there's kind of three horses that I think that are possible for the lead. And I think that, you know, part of this exercise is trying to handicap the connections and what they will do. And so with that in mind, I actually think that either Jace's Road or Dermasotagake is likely to be on the lead. And part of that is we would not have Jace's Road on objectively being the leader, but I do think there is some incentive given the connections of All Ball Stables, the Cox Barn. Again, I'm not saying that they're sacrificing Jace's Road, but I think that, you know, that horse has shown speed earlier in his career, did so to a lesser extent in the Louisiana Derby, being content sitting off of King's Barn. But nevertheless, I think in this situation, he needs to be sent. The horse that right now, again, without Dermasotagake in it, that we would have on the lead is Verifying. And I'm not sure that's exactly where the Cox Barn wants to be, but I definitely, as I said earlier, think that he's going to be quite forward and figures to get a very solid trip in the Kentucky Derby. I think the issue with him is, you know, does he want to go this far, and is he going to be able to hold off the closers?
Well, we may actually get a couple of opinions on that, because Brad Cox just came into the parlay, and we're probably going to flag him down before he goes. And you know, one of the reasons that so many people were enthused with Blazing Sevens, you know, essentially, you know, declaring and opting for the Preakness to get Jace's Road back into the field, the highly valued for contributing to whatever pace we're going to have, because there was real concern that this thing was going to get, you know, pretty pokey up front, and now at least we've got, you know, let's say at least 20% of the field, at least four horses that we know like to be in the vanguard, in Jace's Road, Dermasotagake, Verifying, and King's Barns. And you can pretty much guarantee as well, I would anticipate, Ty, that based on the draw, there will be another horse or two whose hand is going to be forced and is going to have to be in contention early to gain position. And so that could, let's find out right this second. Yeah, put those on and pull that microphone down. And it's always a pleasure to say good morning to Brad Cox.
Hey, Steve. I feel like I'm outside the Saratoga Racing Office.
Exactly. In this sort of barren scenario.
Well, that's normally where I see you.
Exactly. Great to see you. And I wasn't going to bother you with a call to congratulate you on the last couple of weeks. But here you are, positioned with seven horses between the two features next Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it's been a good winter, and, you know, it's carried over to the spring, and hopefully we can capitalize on a good winter and some obviously really good fillies and colts that we're hoping can step up and become grade one winners. Obviously, Angel Empire already is, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
Well, in terms of where you stand right now, and we talked to quite a bit of workout information with Mike Welch and actually with Kevin Kirstein earlier this morning, and, you know, hit show out of the wood, and, you know, you made what you could of that difficult post position, and he certainly ran a race that could have been a winning race. Mm-hmm. Angel of Empire has done next to nothing wrong coming toward this. Verifying stepped up when you needed him to in the Bluegrass, and Jace's Road has also kind of, you know, gone about his business all winter and gets back in. What do you envision in terms of, you know, assuming that you get the kind of draws that that don't hurt you? What are your thoughts on?
Well, from a pace standpoint, I think, you know, obviously Verifying and Jace's Road would be up in the mix. You know, like you said, kind of have to see the draw. Angel of Empire maybe tracking the you know, somewhere mid-pack. And I think somewhat similar with Hit Show as well. I think, you know, their horses that can be a little bit, you know, going a mile and a quarter, it just depends on the pace and just how quick they run away from there. They probably wouldn't find themselves that close if they were in the race last year with the pace, the way it unfolded going into the first turn. But, you know, I think they're all, the bottom line is they're all doing well. Happy with how they worked and how they came out of it. And, you know, we, from a trainer standpoint, still a little, you know, you need to get through this weekend, and hopefully everything works out. Kind of watch the weather and see how things play out over the next or throughout the weekend in regards to the weather on getting these horses their last work before next weekend.
You bring up an interesting question, and I know you want to send out a horse that hits the wire first in the Derby yet. Not that the Mandaloon win isn't, you know, gratifying. Have you done anything differently over these last several years? Is there anything that, any key learnings that have come out of recent Derbies that have you adjust your approach?
I don't think so. Someone asked me that this morning in the media, and I think it gets a little easier to handle things like media and stuff in regards to the build-up and the request, the media request you get. I think you get used to that. In regards to the horses, I think you're kind of, from a trainer standpoint, you're kind of always on edge. You obviously watching them, hoping they're, you know, they work well, and then obviously coming out of it well, you know, they look good that afternoon or, you know, later that morning or whenever it may be, or the next day, and just hoping, you know, as long as they do well, you're just kind of ticking over day to day. And, you know, in our case with these four colts and three fillies, hopefully we can get another good move in them this week and keep them happy, healthy, and just maintain their fitness.
Well, and these four, to give everybody an appreciation, with these four, you will have sent out a total of 9 starters in the last 3 Derbies collectively.
Yeah, it's been a good run, and hopefully we can get all 4 there this year, and hopefully we can get one of the wire first. Someone asked me how many we had this year. I said 4, and I said that's, you know, we had 3 last year, and it didn't help. So maybe one of these 4 can jump up and win it. So, I mean, you know, it's an incredibly tough race to win. Obviously, you know, you dot all your T's, or dot your I's and cross your T's, and hopefully, you know, you can have some racing luck. And that's one thing that's completely out of our control as trainers. And it's just, you know, when the gate comes open, it's, you know, 20 horses and a lot can happen in a mile and a quarter.
If you didn't have these 4 horses in this year, and of course the other horses, by the way, between Mandaloon, the declared 21 winner, Essential Quality 3rd, Tawny Port 7th last year, Zozo's 10th, Cyberknife 18th, not that he didn't go on to a wonderful season. If you didn't have these 4 horses, who are the horses that you've been most impressed with along the way this winter? I know Forte is the easy answer as the horse to beat, but who are you impressed with?
Yeah, obviously he's the horse to beat and the deserving favorite. Tapestry Trice is pretty good. I mean, Verifying, I thought he was, I mean, I don't want to sound.
Go ahead.
I thought he was a winner. I was like, it's going to take a heck of a performance to beat this horse in the Bluegrass, and he got beat. But listen, he's a horse I still think is learning, developing. And I think with a good trip, he's a Kentucky Derby. I mean, he's definitely a Kentucky Derby horse. I'm hoping he could be a Derby winner. So Tapas Trice has been very, you know, very good. Obviously, the longer it looks like, the better for him. He's caught my eye. Aside from that, I mean, listen, I think it's kind of anybody's race, to be honest, with outside Todd. Todd's top two. I mean, they're very, very good. Obviously, the horse in California, practical move, is he knows how to win. He gets there, and he's a good colt as well. So, you know, that's just based off the races. And I obviously saw Tapas Trice breeze the other day. I thought he breezed very, very well.
I saw you. I was at Keeneland and saw you waiting out the photo and after the race. I'm glad I didn't have to be there when you were watching the wood, because to get beat two noses within a half hour, 45 minutes of each other. Actually, it was a little bit longer because the wood went late.
Yeah.
So it was like probably an hour later. But I mean, you have to say to yourself, oh my God, we could have won both these races.
It could always be a lot worse, but they did run well. And those two had worked together the week before, the Friday before at Keeneland at 5:30 in the morning. And after the work, I was like, these two, they can't do any better. And they both ran winning races and, you know, come up a little short. But listen, they earned their way into the Kentucky Derby. Once again, very happy with how they're training. And, you know, I think if they can handle the mile and a quarter, we'll be all right.
Hey, you've got to ask, too, about the Oaks, and we'll let you go. And I got to get Brian Bouye in with the Hall of Fame announcement. And we've got Tyler Wissman going through the thorough pace. Wet Paint sort of muscled her way to the head of the Oaks division. Botanical has won four straight, and no one has said boo about her.
Well, I think it just comes from the synthetic form. I mean,
it's four straight wins. It's four straight
right.
wins. She's by Medaglia d'Oro out of a Blame mare.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody should be worried about her dirt capability.
Right, right. And if they watched her breeze this weekend, they wouldn't either. She breezed fantastic last Thursday, actually. But she had a really good move here on the dirt. I was very pleased with how she came out of it. She actually, that's why I'm over here. I was just schooling the Oaks fillies in the paddock. They all handled it very, very well. Dallas Look and Wet Paint and obviously Botanical. But I do think she'll handle the dirt. She trained here last fall at Churchill, last summer and fall. And, you know, we got her started on the turf just to kind of get some runs into her. And, you know, she wasn't blessed with a tremendous amount of gate speed and stuff. Thought, you know, get her on the grass to get her going. And, you know, obviously that form, she ran a great race at Keeneland. Then that form transferred over to the synthetic. And I'm optimistic that, that form will transfer over to the dirt.
Guy homebred that Ellen Jay jumped in. The Alice Look record is a little spottier.
Mm-hmm.
The Silver Bullet Day, but third in the Oaks behind the terrific effort from Norm's horse, South Lawn. Connect Philly out of the Harlan's Holiday mare for the Thrashes. And, of course, Wet Paint is a Godolphin runner. It's kind of funny, too, right? Because Godolphin was a co-breeder of Botanical.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Obviously, having standing Medaglia d'Oro.
Yeah, and so they had a hand in two out of these three fillies. Should ask, what else can we look forward to from you in the coming week?
Oh, well, hopefully we have a good week. We're pointing West Willpower for the Alex
Sheba.
Yep, Amo Ray for the La Troyenne.
Nice.
Matarea for used to be the Humana. It's Derby City Distaff,
yep.
I believe they call it now. Possibly Wadsworth for the American Turf. I'm not certain he's going to be on the cusp of getting in. Earnings he's a little short on. He actually has no turf earnings, so I think that's going to be an issue. Some others sprinkled in here and there, hopefully some maidens and stuff as well. So hopefully we'll have a big week.
Very nice. And, of course, First Mission, you're not 100% committed to the Preakness, or are you?
Well, I mean, he's got to be committed, but he's going to work this weekend, and he'll just have an easy maintenance half. But, yeah, no, we're pointing for the Preakness with him.
Okay.
I'm very happy with how he came out of the Lexington.
He's got Bernardini written all over him.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. And if he's a nice colt. He's done a lot in a short period of time, and he's taken it really well, and he's responded well, and very happy with the way he's training. And, you know, he'd have, I believe, three works leading up to the Preakness, and, you know, we're happy with how he's doing right now.
Key of Life, the winner the other day in the Beaumont.
Yeah, she, maybe, but probably looking at the Miss Preakness with her.
Nice.
Grade three. That was our original plan after the race at Oaklawn, and, you know, we kind of wheeled her back a little quick, but I think we were back in 3 weeks or 22 days to the Beaumont. It was kind of a last-second decision to go to the Beaumont. I'm glad we did, but I'm not certain she really wants to go much further than that. That was the Beard course, and I think she had about all she could take there late.
Instant Coffee. We got to get Al a big win along the way here. It's not Triple Crown season without Al.
Yeah, no, he's obviously didn't look like we have any shot of getting in the Derby, but we've turned our attention toward the Preakness. It's something that we're going to look at with him. Yep, and
right, good.
He's doing well. He had a work this past weekend, and hopefully we'll get him keep him on track for the Preakness.
And I think you told me you're thinking Jiper for Caravelle.
Did you? No, we're looking kind of our. We're looking at Unbridled Sydney right now, which is here next Friday,
yeah, yeah.
I believe, Oaks Day. That would be her prep for Ascot, King Stand for her.
Okay.
Is what we're hoping for. We obviously have to get through this race.
Who was it? Somebody told me about the Jiper, and I thought it was a filly, but maybe not. I can't. I'm not going to remember. Brad Cox. Thank you.
You're welcome.
always nice to have a surprise visit. And, you know what we'll do with Tyler? We'll have Tyler come back after Andy Serling for part two of the Therapace conversation. And, Ty, so we'll talk to you in about 40 minutes. And this is why you come to a venue to have conversations pop up like this. Let me get a picture of Brad so that we can put it on the there you go. I'm going to go to portrait mode, actually, I think, because there we go.
And, need all the help I can get.
There you go. I love it. Brad Cox, everybody. That was great. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Talk to you.
Brad Cox. You never know who's going to come by, especially here, because usually nobody comes by. So thank you. That was like cleanup on aisle four. Let's get to, this is crazy, let's get to Brian Bouye and get your Hall of Fame announcement, then Andy, and then we'll go back to Tyler. I'm not going to miss a chance to do what we just did with Brad. All right, here we go. And there's a chance, of course, it's 5 minutes in, so there's probably been a few releases out there on Twitter, but Brian Bouye from the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent, and the big reveal. We look forward to hearing about the Hall of Fame class every time we come to Churchill, because I'm always here when you announce.
Well, happy to be on, and are you ready for it?
Oh, absolutely.
Here we go. We've got a class of eight being inducted in 2023. There are four contemporary inductees. We have three racehorses that are being inducted in their first year, Arrogate, California Chrome, and Songbird. And the jockey Corey Nakatani is the fourth of the contemporary selections. We have one historic review candidate being inducted. That is jockey Fernando Toro. And then we have three pillars of the turf, John W. Haynes, Leonard Jerome, and Stella Thayer. So that's the eight for this year.
Wow. All right. Let's take this. So no trainers received the threshold.
That is correct.
Wow. All right. Let's start with Corey Nakatani. And this is obviously gratifying for Corey and for Matt. And, you know, a career that, you know, certainly in terms of big wins, it actually mirrors his weight, actually also mirrored Craig Perrett, it seems. You know, big numbers with Breeders' Cup races, a little less success on the Triple Crown front, but Nakatani's numbers and you know, big wins certainly stand up.
Yeah, I think you look at, you know, 3,909 career wins, but 10 Breeders' Cup wins, yeah. Which is, you know, absolutely an incredible total. He had multiple years where he won multiple races at the Breeders' Cup. So, you know, this is a guy that had 10 riding titles on the Southern California circuit. You know, he rode a couple of Hall of Famers and Lava Man, Serena Song, several other champions. And, you know, I think when you look at what he did on the state, on the big stages, I mean, this is a guy who won 341 graded stakes overall. So, you know, 3,909 wins and 341 of them being graded stakes, you know, really talks about the quality of the career that he had.
Corey Nakatani. And actually, before we talk about the three horses, Fernando Toro, and I'm sure this will be well received, because those that I've heard from those that watch Toro ride on a regular basis just say that he was just masterful. And so this is a welcome addition.
Yeah, you look at what Fernando did in his career, and you know, he won 3,555 races. You know, and he, 80 of those were graded stakes, and he rode an era where a lot, there weren't as many graded stakes opportunities. The first, you know, 7-8 years of his time in North America was before the graded stakes system. So, you know, we're talking about a guy who won the inaugural Breeders' Cup Mile of Royal Heroine, who got inducted to the Hall of Fame. You know, you name a race in Southern California, and he won it multiple times. And this is a guy who was competing against, you know, the Pinkais and the Shoemakers early in his career. And then after that, he was competing with the Gary Stevens and the Chris McCarrans and the Delahousses, and you know, those guys all have great respect for him, and they, you know, a lot of them sent in letters on his behalf to the Historic Review Committee. And you know, Fernando Toro is still with us in Southern California. He was overjoyed with the news, you know, so it's you know, something we're really excited about to see him being honored.
That's tremendous. Turn our attention to the three horses, and interesting that this happens. This seems to happen often, and of course, no greater parallel than Rachel Alexandra and Zenyatta going in simultaneously. But Arrogate and Cal Chrome that are certainly contemporaries and foes.
Yeah, and I think you look at their careers, and they're obviously they're very different horses and very different accomplishments. You know, Arrogate had that you know, burst of brilliance, so that four straight races where he set the track record in the Travers, then defeated California Chrome in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and then set another track record in the Pegasus, and then had that unbelievable race in Dubai where he you know, missed the break and got pinched back, and then came back and won. And I think if you look at those four Grade One races or Group One in the Dubai Cup, you know, when you take those four, I mean, that's as good a streak as any horse that I can think of, the way he put those races together. And, you know, he's the all-time earnings leader among North American horses with over $17 million. So Arrogate, you know, while he didn't have the super long career, there was absolute brilliance there. And then you look at California Chrome. I mean, you know, kind of this rags-to-riches story that comes out of California with two partners who people didn't really know much about. And, you know, a two-time horse of the year, a Derby and a Preakness winner, you know, and then he has kind of a bit of an injury issue, but he comes back and is horse of the year again. You know, California Chrome had a huge fan base. You know, he won on dirt and turf. You know, he had success at a lot of different tracks, and you know, people just loved the connections there with, you know, Art Sherman. You know, was a wonderful story, and obviously this was a horse that a lot of people really gravitated to.
Very much Songbird, of course, and her career exploits, that's a resume that, you know, pretty much it stamped itself as a Hall of Fame career.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're talking a horse that, you know, had 12 graded wins, you know, really checks off all the boxes. And I mean, you know, some people can argue that her first career loss was as good as any performance she ever had when Beholder just got her by a nose in the Breeders' Cup. But, you know, Songbird absolutely had a phenomenal career. You know, you look at what she did for Jerry Hollendorfer and Fox Hill Farms, winning 13 of 15 overall, you know, and just, you know, she checks off all the boxes. You know, she was a Breeders' Cup winner. She was an Eclipse Award winner. You know, she really did everything you could ask a great filly to do.
Arrogate, California Chrome, Songbird, and Corey Nakatani, the contemporary candidates, along with Fernando Toro. And then that's actually, this is a nice trio of historic pillars of the turf. One that is very much still with us, the wonderful Stella Fair, and of course the matriarch of Tampa Bay Downs, and the longtime president of the hall and the museum, and John Haynes, a name that if people don't know, they should, and certainly Jerome. I'm actually shocked that that Jerome isn't already in the circle for pillars of the turf.
Yeah, I think that just shows you the depth of the candidates that we're having to review for that category. You know, unlike the other categories, the horses, the jockeys, and the trainers, which have been around since the museum was here in 1955, you know, the pillars of the turf category has only been around for about a decade, and we're still catching up with a lot of history there. You know, we've inducted some, you know, wonderful contributors to the game there, but we still got a long list of some really, really good people there. You know, Stella Thayer has been outstanding for the sport of racing and has turned Tampa Bay Downs into a wonderful track. She's done great things as the first woman president of the museum, as a steward for the Jockey Club, and everything that she does. You know, she's served as president of the Thoroughbred Racing Association, just done so many incredible things in the sport, and has been a wonderful leader. And then, you know, New York Racing, you know, would not be, you know, anywhere near the quality it is if it was not for John Haynes and what he did in the 1950s to really, you know, get the legislation to improve the tracks and to get a organization, which eventually became known as NYRA through the legislation. And along with Christopher Chenery and Harry Guggenheim, you know, those were hugely influential people on the state of the game in New York. And then Leonard Jerome, you know, this is a guy who built three racetracks or was involved in the building of three racetracks and, you know, established, you know, some of the big stakes. You know, the Belmont Stakes was first contested at Jerome Park, which he conceived and led for a number of years. And then you have Morris Park and Sheepshead Bay, which were amazing contributions to the sport of racing. So I think it's an incredible class, and we're really excited about it.
With good reason. When is the ceremony?
Friday, August 4th, right here in Saratoga at the Fasig Tipton Pavilion. It's 10:30 in the morning. It's free and open to the public. Kicks off the big Whitney weekend here at Saratoga. Once again, we've got Tom Durkin as the master of ceremonies. You know, we always pack the house there, so we advise you to get in early. It's free and open to the public, but if you can't make it or you live out of the area, we will be showing it live on the museum website, so you can stream it right from there.
We got plenty more to talk to Brian Bouye about, not this morning, but soon, the exhibits and, of course, celebrating, a lot of celebrating going on, the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's Triple Crown, which everybody's sort of, you know, living. We're seeing regular, you know, updates associated with 50 years to the day, and that'll be fun all the way through Belmont, and so many great things that have happened at the hall. Brian, as always, appreciate this. Congratulations to everybody involved, most notably the you know, the contemporary Corey Nakatani, and certainly Fernando Toro, who is hopefully going to be able to attend, and Stella certainly will be able to attend, and hopefully some Haynes and Jerome family heirs. Should be a terrific induction.
We're looking forward to it. I appreciate it, Steve.
Brian Bouye, everybody, and the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame. There is your annual announcement, and we will get to Andy Serling next. I got to kind of absorb this, the fact that none of the trainers, including John Sheriffs and Graham Motion and Christophe Clement, reached the threshold, 50% plus one. So I guess they'll come back again, you know, come back up for consideration next year. We'll get to Andy. Andy's a voter. He's a Hall of Fame voter. Hey, Andy, good morning.
Morning.
Just off with Brian Bouye with the Hall of Fame announcement. Arrogate, California Chrome, Songbird, Corey Nakatani, and among the contemporaries.
And I'm overwhelmed. I mean, it's, I don't know how you expect me to do the show after putting all that incredible news on me in such a short period of time.
Well, I know we you and I kicked around the names that when they came out for consideration, and you know, these three, you know, Blind Luck doesn't make the cut this year, and Havre de Grace, but Arrogate, I mean, Arrogate was just a mercurial talent. California Chrome.
Why was he a mercurial talent?
Well, because he,
you like use big words. Let's get the definition of mercurial.
I mean,
the official definition of mercurial, since you don't speak common language that others like to.
Like mercurial is
a subject to sudden or unpredictable changes of mood or mind.
Right.
Really? Did he? Was he known to be laughing one moment and crying the next?
Well, I think when the reference is mercurial talent, meaning a horse, meaning in this particular case, a horse that flashes onto the scene for a defined period of time, as opposed to, you know, sustained excellence start to finish.
Well, he ran four of the best races we've seen in,
yes,
in Ghost Zapper, and then something happened, and he just didn't run well after that. He ran really remarkable races for a period of time, and very important races. I voted for him.
I did as well. And you just made me think of.
Oh, it's also a drug or other compound containing mercury. So maybe that's what you meant. I'm just checking.
California.
It contains the element mercury.
Right.
I think he was going to become an equine thermometer.
He was like Jeremy
Piven. David Mamet would say. Anyway.
Then there's California Chrome, who, you know, whose career is spread out over a longer period of time, but. You know, was wildly popular. I mean, I think this was one of those horses that people just I think in part because of Art Sherman, and you know, the story around it was, you know, really at least it started out as warm and cuddly.
I think the owner obviously did him no favors. So you mentioned a human element. I don't think you can really count the human element, because the owners really turned a lot of people off. Or one of the owners, I don't have an opinion particularly one way or the other. He was a good horse, you know, and he ended his career very, very impressively. And, you know, if they hadn't had that sort of preposterously stupid plan to take him over to Newmarket and they turn him into a European turf horse for God knows what reason. There will be a time when we'll look back on American racing, and I won't be the only one that shakes their head laughing at the foolishness that some people have had in shipping horses over to Ascot, going, boy, did our horse run great. He ran sixth. He ran great. It's like that old Odd Couple episode. Where Oscar wins the Greyhound in the poker game, and Felix becomes his partner, gets really excited by the whole thing, and he runs in a race, and Felix says he was beautiful, he was magnificent, and Oscar says he was last. And that's kind of like Ascot, right? You know, we get all agog when they go over there, and, you know, they run seventh, and it was really impressive, and they could have won a grade one worth more money at Belmont as the first or second choice. But maybe now that the Queen has passed away, people won't be as excited about meeting soon to be King. Is King Charles? It's King George, right? He's a new name, right?
Oh, what did he settle on?
I don't know. I don't want to disrespect the English crown. But maybe the lack of the Queen's participation will discourage some people from going over there and finishing seventh at the expense of maybe winning or running second in the big race at Belmont. with a bigger purse.
What also is interesting, and I brought it up with Brian, is of course the parallel of Arrogate and California Chrome both having won World Cups and facing off and finishing within what I think Arrogate beat them by less than a length in that
about a half length.
Yeah, right. I've got a terrific picture from after that race.
Makes me feel all warm and fuzzy.
I'll put that. Actually, no, people will understand why. So there's a nice parallel for the two of them going in together at the same time, and then there's Songbird, who, won another horse that captured hearts along the way.
Not mine.
Not yours. But I'm glad you said it. I knew you were going to say it. As I was coming out of my mouth, I said, "Is he going to say not mine?" And thank you. it is tough to look at that record. I mean, 13 wins in 2 seconds, she
is a terrific horse.
Yeah, she was almost indomitable.
And she did leave a laundry list of horses that nobody can remember finishing behind her, but I don't disagree. She had a very good record. She was very consistent. She's a remarkably good 2-year-old.
That's right.
I thought she was massively overrated, but that doesn't mean she wasn't a good horse.
And there's degrees, right? I mean, and of course,
degrees of overratedness?
Yeah, well, degrees of...
She was as high as anybody.
When it comes to horses, particularly as 2 and 3 year olds, they face their class. I mean,
no doubt. She was very good. She was, and she was popular. And her Breeders' Cup race against Beholder was a very good effort, as was her 2-year-old Breeders' Cup race. That was an extremely impressive race.
That was, I'm just thinking, that was the same year at Santa Anita, right, as Arrogate and California Chrome.
I'll take your word for it.
Right? I think I'm almost...
I don't remember.
I'm almost positive that's got to be the same year.
I trust you.
Yeah, with Stevens on, that's right, with Stevens on Beholder, and yeah. Well, there it is, and Corey Nakatani. I am a little surprised that none of the trainers hit the threshold.
Who was nominated? I know I voted for Kristoff.
Kristoff.
I think I voted for Grand Motion.
And Grand Motion and John Sheriff.
Yeah, I like John a lot.
Well, they will have to. The trainers will wait for next year. So. That's the news from.
And I tell you, it is big news. So, with news like that, we probably should end the show early today.
No, I've got.
Let people absorb.
You are unbelievable.
How's Kentucky today?
No, not yet. Actually, it's been chilly.
It's not yet a big morning in Kentucky. Well, you've got 34 minutes to go.
No, it's been a big morning on the show.
Okay.
I've had a busy.
It has been a big morning.
Yeah, I thought. It's always a big morning when we're here.
Getting ready to visit the sites. Head over to the backstretch at Churchill.
I came through this morning through the backstretch.
In your car on the way to doing the show.
Sort of.
In what way, sort of, did you not?
Well, I parked, because I parked and I walked around a little bit for half an hour, and then went up to watch the workouts at 7:30.
Wow. Seemed like a quiet morning. I didn't see a lot of
from
Kevin Kirstein.
No, there was mostly some galloping and first looks at a few horses that making their first appearances on the grounds. how about we catch up a little bit on some New York action from the weekend?
Okay.
One conversation that came up yesterday, actually with Rich, too, with Rich Migliori, the seemingly active role that the stewards are playing to try to maybe diminish the herding. Do you sense that with the two notable DQs?
Well, I don't think that we've seen the DQs necessarily be extreme cases of herding, and I guess we'll find out better when Irad gets back. But I think they have been adjudicating races a little more stringently in some cases. I mean, listen, there was a DQ that I was surprised by. And I rarely am surprised by their decisions. There was one last week, I forget who. Maybe it was mandatory. I'm not sure. I thought could have stayed.
Yes.
It was a terrible call, but I mean, listen, there was the blatant one mistake yesterday. I mean, I think that most of the takedowns have been pretty cut and dry. Most of the non-decisions have also been the right decisions. Like I said, I usually agree with our stewards, and there's a basic philosophy which I've disagreed with, and that involves herding. But I don't think, maybe I'm wrong, you know, I'm missing one or two. I don't think we've seen yet, you know, a situation, there was a maiden race at Belmont some point last spring or summer where they left a horse up and might as well just drop the horse over the outside rail and carried out so badly. I haven't seen one of those until I see an extreme herd come down in ways that happened in the past. I'll withhold judgment. I hope they are. I think it is a safety issue, as I've said many times. And I don't blame the jockeys at all. The jockeys are doing what they've been basically told by the stewards are acceptable.
Exactly.
If the stewards are changing that, I hope they're communicating that to the riders, and hopefully there will be a positive change in that department. But I don't blame a rider for trying to win by doing things that have been acceptable in the past. Of course, the problem is it depends on the rider. And some riders might not be as effective in riding and able to, you know, sort of herd horses out and do it without contact or do it. But you always sort of flirt with the possibility of a horse sort of getting out of control and an unfortunate incident happening. And I think that in the past, the stewards have condoned a type of riding that I wouldn't condone. And I don't blame the riders at all. I think they're doing whatever they can to win that the stewards have told them is legal. I just feel sometimes maybe the stewards should tell them certain things are illegal if they haven't. So we'll see if that changes. I hope so. You know, I don't like seeing a lot of disqualifications because it negatively affects the bettors, but I do think they're warranted if it prevented a horse from having his best chance of winning. I think there's two incredibly foolish things you see on, well, two of the incredibly foolish things you see on Twitter about disqualifications are worst DQ ever. That's almost never true. Palamuse is going to hold that record for perpetuity, hopefully. But also, you know, minor sort of run-of-the-mill DQs are being declared the worst DQs ever by some people. But also, I'm losing my train of thought, the horse was never going by. Yeah, I think that's a very poor way of discussing the situation, because in virtually all the cases, there's no way of knowing for sure if a horse is going to go by.
I agree.
A horse has momentum. He gets his momentum halted by a foul. A good example might be D. Hopper when he came down in a maiden race earlier this year. I think if you halt a horse's momentum, you can't really know that horse, especially lower level horses. They don't have it, so push button, you know. So I don't agree with that never going by either argument as being valid, but also something that can really ever be defended, because you just don't know. And I think a horse should be allowed an unimpeded path to the finish line. So we'll see. Hopefully the stewards will be more proactive in that. And I think if they are, you'll see the riders adapt and stop doing it. But all the riders are doing is what they've been basically told they can get away with. Their
exactly.
Jobs to try to win for the owners and the bettors. I don't fault a rider for doing something that they have been told is legal.
No, I hear you. We've been saying that all along, that they're only doing what they're being allowed to do, and at the same time, if those parameters are brought, you know, under tighter rein, they'll adjust. But
they will.
Yeah, but it's the steward's responsibility.
They'll adjust, or they'll pay a severe consequence.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we'll see. You know, I don't. Like I said, time will tell. You know, I'm not sure that there just haven't been a number of more incidents lately that have been warranted DQs. I mean, yesterday's was just ridiculous. I mean, you could see it. I can see it on my phone in the subway in the pan.
Oh, on the steak. In the steak race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Speaking of the steak races, I know, you know, there were stallion races. That Lifetime of Chance that was moved from Linda Rice.
Listen, it's an owner's right to do what they want with their horses. I thought that was a surprising move. The horse ran so well for Linda. But they made a decision that they felt they should make.
Well, I thought the horse did a lot of running and was able to hold off. There was a little jostling that went on in that race too, actually.
Right. Well, the winner came over and got somebody else that was kind of out of the race. Probably something worthy of a fine. Certainly not worthy of a DQ. The second horse was a New York bred that finally ran against New York breds. There's a lesson there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I had commented when that horse broke its maiden. I think the day before Christmas at Tampa.
Tampa.
What was that? I think we talked about it on Twitter.
We did.
I'm almost sure that
horse. Yeah, 100%.
It was a Lisa Lewis horse saying, "What? Why is that horse running down in Florida?"
Yeah.
And the purses are so much better, and the horse obviously is good enough to compete in New York bred main races, and they deny themselves real purse money. You know, the New York Reds, Steve, I don't know if you've heard, they start with an advantage.
Yes, yes, they do. Andy, speaking of how good, what's your read on the Woodhaven winner, that Baloney?
It was just, he had a very good trip in what came up a moderately fast race. He ran better than he ran in Florida.
Yeah, I was actually looking forward to your read.
There are three horses that we've seen, and maybe there's others out there that I'm not aware of, between Carl Spackler, Talk of the Nation, and Far Bridge that have been pretty good down in Florida this winter. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, they may all three meet in the American Turf on Derby Day?
American Turf, yep.
Yeah, and I think we'll get an idea. Hopefully the turf at Churchill is real turf this year.
It looks good.
And we'll better. It looks good. That's always telling. Hopefully we'll get a good idea, but they're all promising horses. Now, whether they're horses that really want to go longer, and they're the type that will run in races like the Belmont Derby and the Sarah Derby, or, you know, the Hall of Fame is $500,000 a mile this year. So there's other opportunities as well. And I think the Manila is $250,000. So, you know, we'll see where the connections decide to take them, see where they go. But they're all pretty promising horses. No disrespect to Baloney, but he obviously has not shown to be of that caliber. But it's a long year. He could improve.
Well, and there was also, speaking of Florida, there was a horse that, wasn't there the horse that upset on Florida Derby Day, and I want to say Jack Sisterson, had an upset winner that we thought was impressive.
Well, as you may remember from a show a few weeks ago, I didn't watch the races on Florida Derby Day. But we can go through that again if you like.
No, I'm just suggesting when you mentioned, Talk of the Nation and Carl Spackler and... Because that was the race that Spackler scratched, right? He wasn't happy.
No, he scratched Carl Spackler scratched out of an opening day stake at Keeneland. I don't think. I mean, the horse in there may have been okay, but I think the others have shown to be a little bit above them.
So they're talking an overflow field too. That'll be a 14 horse.
People like to run on Derby weekend. I don't know if you noticed that.
Big time.
Are you going to stay there, or are you going to head out of town like Friday after the show's over?
No, I'm doing the Saturday.
You're doing a special show on Derby.
I am. I'm doing the Derby show.
Now, let me ask you a question. I have two questions. Two-parter. Do you believe that doing this show will enhance your chances of getting an Eclipse Award? And the second part is that the reason you're doing it?
I'm doing it.
Imagine that you have some sort of thing attached to you where if you lie, you get an electric shock that may not kill you, but land you off. I guess we got our answer. I think they should call the show Steve Vick's Desperate Attempt to Get an Eclipse Award.
The network asked me, was I going to say no?
I'm just trying to get to the bottom of this. I'm just trying to, understand why you're doing this. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, by 5 o'clock on Derby Day, you're usually in Ohio, right?
not by 5.
If not Erie, Pennsylvania.
No, that's not...
That's not correct. You're lying. Your nose is growing. Absolutely. When is the last time there was a Kentucky Derby run where you were still at Churchill Downs when the Derby was run? Imagine once again, electric current.
You got to be kidding. Last year, the year before, there have been exactly two occasions where I've had to leave early, and only two in 24 years. Two. Where my friend John Hubbard was dying, and I drove to Hamilton, New York, to be with him 2 days before he died.
You're not really going to bring up an ailing friend.
I am going to bring up
an ailing friend. To try to push me aside on what you know and I know is a little fibbing going on here. We can drop it. Seriously, we can drop it. Because clearly this is a touchy subject.
Unbelievable.
For you.
Unbelievable.
Listen, I really hope that your attempt to get an Eclipse Award finally works. I really do.
Well, I thought maybe you would contribute to the effort with a visit, Derby.
I'm trying to once again increase your chances of winning a Eclipse Award.
We'll see. I'm trying to.
I would be happy to come on the show if there was any chance I'd be able to find where you are. But my experiences at Churchill Downs have been that actually being able to move around and find a location if you're not 100% familiar with it is virtually impossible.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
I know I'm not wrong.
Well, and especially
I tried to find Gabby Gaudette at one point last year, and she was like somewhere near me, and it was just like impossible to get there.
I was able to get I got you and Gabby picture together at Keeneland though at Breeders' Cup last year.
Okay, well, that was at Keeneland, where it's very easy to get around and know where people are.
Well, you know, actually...
But thank you for that.
I disagree. Keeneland...
Keeneland is the size of a thimble.
Look, I agree with that, but I don't know. I'm just more familiar. I just know this building very well, and I just know my way around.
I was in a paddock with Gabby. I mean, how can you not find us there? Give me a break.
That's true.
Do your show from the paddock at Churchill. I can find that.
All right. Wait
till they still have one, or did they tear it down?
No, wait till you see what they're doing. It's unbelievable. I mean,
is the new one finished, or are they still working on it?
Call it about 70% finished. There'll be some nuance between this version and next year's version, including a build-out with a restaurant. Darren, after the show yesterday, took me around. The thing that is amazing also is the first turn, this new first turn.
Is nuance really the right word?
Yeah,
you know, once again, mercurial nuance. I don't think nuance is the word that I would have used.
No, you.
No, I don't. But you know, go ahead.
Well, there is some. There is. You're going to be impressed.
Oh, I'm ready to be bowled over.
I'm sure you are. Well, you've bowled over the audience today. This has been a virtuoso performance.
Oh yeah, a lot of good stuff covered here.
Well, the one thing I didn't rail against with this Hall of Fame announcement, again, no Kona Gold, which is just inexplicable. It's bizarre, actually, at this point. Bizarre that he.
Unlike our good friend Jay Pribman, I'm going to sleep okay about this one. I happen to agree with you and Jay that he belongs in the Hall of Fame, and I voted for him.
Yeah, he should have gone in with Alex Solis, which would have been apropos, but no, can't do it.
I like Alex. I haven't seen Alex in years.
I see Alex the second more often.
Yes, many of us do. But yes. I meant his father.
I know. He hasn't. That's
yeah,
true. He hasn't come easy.
He's a nice man. Yeah.
Andy, thanks so much for this. And
it's as good as it's been for you. It's been even better for me.
That's what I like to hear. And I look for it. Are you going to do some video work for Derby and Oaks?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it. I probably should, shouldn't I?
Yeah, of course you should.
Let me talk to Eric about that.
There you go.
I'll have to tape it on Wednesday because I will.
Sponsored by At the Races, or sponsored by the SiriusXM Derby Day Show.
You want to sponsor us, Steve? You want to send us a check?
I will be happy to.
No, you won't. See you later.
See, this is why you subscribe to SiriusXM for a quality 30-minute stand-up routine with me as the pinata. Jesus, I'll tell you, I really should get an award. He's unbelievable. He is unbelievable. Let's get back to Tyler Wissman. Tyler was not rudely interrupted by Brian Bouye or Brad Cox, but certainly was rudely interrupted by Andy. Tyler.
Thanks for having me back.
No, thanks for being willing to sit out while Brad Cox and Andy visited, and Brian Bouye. This has been crazy what we've been able to shove into 3 hours today. Did we learn anything from Brad that is going to affect the thorough pace decision-making process?
You know, I had a little bit of trouble hearing, but I think from what I gathered, right, it seemed to indicate that Jace's road would be forward. And if I heard correctly, he expected Verifying to be more mid-pack. Correct me if I'm wrong there.
He actually, the mid-pack candidate that might surprise you was actually Angel of Empire.
Okay.
That caught my attention, that he does not want Angel of Empire left with too much to do. That was clear.
I think that's kind of where we left off the conversation too, right? Like if you look at the top three betting choices and with that Forte, Papatrice, and Angel of Empire, you know, prior to those comments, I would have had Angel of Empire in that last fit, if you would, of the field, right? And along with all three of those. And I think that's why people are just struggling with gravitating towards one of those top three choices and being very confident, because all three of them will require the necessary pace, which I do think they will get. But more importantly, they'll have to work out a trip. And, you know, I was having a discussion yesterday with Pete, right? And, you know, there's, as someone who looks at pace, certainly as, you know, impacting races, obviously you don't have to look further than last year's Derby to get a very good lesson on that. But That's only one element, right? Like, and from a speed figure perspective, I will always reference the Thoroughbred figures. And after having taken a look at the Thoroughbred figures on Sunday night, and just kind of knowing and looking back at some of the past derbies, specifically 2019, 20, and 21, you had 3 years there where, from a Thoroughbred perspective, so using their speed figures, the winner didn't get the best figure. And it seems to me like there's a more than good shot that happens again this year, where because of trip and ground loss, one of those three probably runs the best race or gets the best figure, again, accounting for ground loss, but doesn't actually get the job done. So, I'm trying to use pace to sort of account for, okay, which one is going to get the best trip. Maybe I can key on them, and also try to find some underneath value as well, because again, I'm having a very difficult time in picking a winner that I want to key on, and I'm approaching it a little bit upside down this year and trying to key on horses that I think maybe underneath that could get in the money at a very big price.
A couple of things before I ask you, because I know you've got a couple of horses in mind that you want to expand on. In regards to breakout and internal fractions and pace, is there anything that stands out to you about, particularly, when watching what Tappet Trice did and the way in which Louis Saez employed him in the bluegrass with that middle early move? Is there some utility in thorough pace that quantifies the tactical speed to that extent?
That's one of the things I would say that we're working on, right? There's two elements, right? There's sort of the inter-race, and then, probably most importantly is how can we do a better job at weight pace, right? So I think that's one of the gaps that we've identified, is we do a really good job at shaping up the overall race pace and identifying, historically, and again, by historically, I mean in the past couple of races, the pace dynamics that either favored or disadvantaged a runner. But what we need to do is, okay, now we can project forward today's race. How can we help you better identify the best stretch runner? If we're predicting a plus 35 on our scale, again, that would favor stretch runners. What we need to do is figure out, okay, how do we identify perhaps the best weight runner? So I think to answer your question, I mean, other than visually looking at it, the various speed figures that are already out there, I mean, I think he's competitive on pretty much all figures, definitely competitive, from a Thoroughbred perspective, and will get the necessary pace that he's did not get in the bluegrass. So, I mean, it seems like it should be all systems go from my perspective on Tappet Trice. Again, it's just going to come down to whether or not he's going to get the trip that's going to, allow for him to win the race.
We got about six, seven minutes. Tyler Wissman with us, Thorough Pace. We introduced the concept last month as Tyler officially launched. Talk about the horses that you see. There's some kernel of pace edge that make them interesting at big prices.
Yeah, so I know in listening to you for years, right, like you at least try on Derby Week to get each runner a significant call or a significant mention, and I'll go ahead and get a 50-1 shot out of the way early in your couple of weeks of coverage, and that's Sun Thunder. So I think that this horse is incredibly interesting on the basis of pace. I think if you look at the pedigree, its running style, it's no doubt that, I will admit I'm a little bit confused by the addition of blinkers. If that means that he's going to be a little bit more forward, that might temper my enthusiasm. I think that if I'm Kenny McPeak, I look at this race, I look at the races that he's exited, and say, my horse is going to get the distance. And if I come with one run, there's a chance that, I definitely could be in the money and an outside shot, as we saw last year, that he could win the entire thing. So he's one that I'm definitely keying on. And the reason that I'm keying on that is you actually look back at the past three races, and they're all fairly interesting. So if you look and you kind of go back to the Risen Star, which I will also say, by the way, I think that's the biggest key race of the entire prep season, in my opinion, is the Risen Star. It's really unfortunate that we have to watch it in the dark. I don't know what the back half of that field, like what they're going to mount to, but I do think that the trifecta from that race, so Angel of Empire, Sun Thunder, and Two Fills, are all very live going into next week. And definitely we'll have some ticket with those three combinations. But again, going back to that race, I think a lot of people see that race and they look at, you know, where Angel of Empire was from a positional standpoint, where Sun Thunder was, and they say that the pace collapsed, but we don't really have it that way, right? I think if you look at Sun Thunder, he was like 10th at the second call, but he was really only, you know, six or so lengths off. So while, yes, there were a lot of horses in the race, and the horses that were in the back half did do well, they weren't that far from the actual pace. So we don't have that pace as being a meltdown, if you will. And so with that in mind, that was a very solid performance and, you know, definitely his best race to date. He then goes to the Louisiana Derby, and you already mentioned the fact that this was his second race in a mile or eighth or more. He would then go on for a third one. But in the Louisiana Derby, he had absolutely no pace. And it showed, right? Like, my expectations in retrospect are quite low for that. I don't think that his performance should be, you know, really downgraded on the basis of he had no pace to run it. Then he comes back to the Bluegrass, another mile and an eighth race, and we already mentioned that with Tapa Trice, which is a minus 14, which again should favor front runners. And while Tapa Trice was able to overcome that, you know, he was not, right? So he did finish fourth, ran on admirably. I don't know that they were necessarily, you know, trying or to empty the horse out. So this kind of is like a Kenny McPeak sneaky move consideration that I have. I think with BJ Hernandez back in the saddle, knows his way around Churchill Downs, this horse is going to get more pace than he's gotten in his last three races by a long shot. And I do think that at 40, 50 to 1, this horse has a big chance to hit the board. And I will be looking to play him at fourth and third positions for the most part. And that's how I see Sun Thunder.
I like it. I mean, they're basically a reverse tri-key kind of a horse, or a reverse super key type horse that is going to be picking him up late, and you know, it isn't necessarily going to be one of those horses that is first, second, third, or fourth at the eighth pole. Usually you'll get two and as many as three of those horses in the super, but there's always that Steppenwolfer, that's what I'm talking about, something from Dale from Dallas Stewart. You know, there's always something that is clunking up, and that's as good a candidate as any. How about Disarm, whose name is being now mentioned with alacrity?
And I think that was another horse that I wanted to mention, right? So also exit that Louisiana Derby, was a little closer than Sun Thunder, but definitely, you know, was up against it from a pace perspective. And then comes to Keeneland, you know, Steve Asmussen wins everywhere, but seems to struggle a little bit more, you know, relatively speaking, at Keeneland. Obviously, as you've indicated on your show, the Lexington was just a means to get the necessary points. I expected the horse to work back once. The fact that he's already worked back, I think, signals that this horse has perhaps another move forward. At least that's the expectation from the barn. You know, the only negative that I can say is that work was so impressive yesterday. I think his price gets hurt a little bit. I will also say, as you've mentioned, I think you said Sun Thunder could work tomorrow. I don't actually like the horses that I like, especially Bombs, to work alone, because they tend to get a disproportionate amount of attention. But that's the hand that we're dealt. So I do think that both of them are exiting the Louisiana Derby, where neither one of them had a shot given the pace in that situation. And I do think that, you know, that's another one that I'm definitely not going to leave out of the underneath spots as well.
Before we lay out what your plan is and how you're going to release information between now and let's say Oaks Day, who is high on people's radar and has gotten tons of attention and who has been a complete beneficiary of their paces? You know, essentially a trips and traps kind of a horse, as Andy and Eric Donovan used to so fabulously present.
I think there's probably two candidates that I think fit the bill, right? So I think King's Barn, which we've already discussed at length, where he got away with an easy trip, I'm not ready to fully dismiss him because I think there's still upside there. And probably the same can be said for Mage as well, right? So if you look at Mage, yeah, he made that menacing move, but wasn't able to hold off Forte. He's being asked to do a lot. I know that he's going to get a fair amount of buzz, and I just don't particularly like him. I don't think he has any sort of figure edge or, you know, as I've heard many people espouse throughout the years, it's rare for horses to truly run a better race or move significantly forward in the Kentucky Derby at this distance and the demanding, you know, pace, so on and so forth. And I just don't see that Mage will be able to do that. You know, another horse that I think that is probably going to be what we would refer to as a pace advantage in his last race is Confidence Game. So, you know, no secret that race did melt down in the Rebel. He was a beneficiary of that and certainly don't like the layoff either. So, you know, my hope is, again, I'm not wishing ill on any connections, but that he works quite well and then just doesn't perform based on the layoff. So, I think those are three candidates that I think for sure. I will also say that I'm fairly negative based on a number of reasons, the speech figures, but also the setup that was provided to, you know, both Mandarin Hero and Practical Move. If I'm losing any horse out of California, it's definitely Skinner, who was wide around both turns and was further back on a fairly tepid pace.
I completely agree. Tyler Wissman, everybody, and thorough pace. Get familiar with it, and we'll look forward to more information, Tyler, and we'll get you back for final decisions next week.
Can't thank you enough. Thanks, Steve.
You got it. Tyler Wissman, everybody, follow Tyler as presented on Twitter. And thanks to everybody for this absolutely breakneck 3 hours. KK started us off. Horse Racing KK, of course, Kevin Kirstein. We checked in with Austin Reed at Finger Lakes as their season is underway back today again. Dave Basler as the Ohio Racing in Cincinnati and at Cleveland. Mike Welch stopped by. We got Mike's first view of the works the last several days. Brad Cox popped up out of nowhere. We got some Brad Cox information. Andy Serling, Brian Bouye with the Hall of Fame announcement, and Tyler with the thorough pace. Did I say that twice? Right, is that it? KK, Austin Reed, Dave Basler, Mike Welch, Tyler Wissman, Brad Cox, Brian Bouye, Andy Serling. All right, I owe Tom Ventura, John White, and Seth Merrow phone calls tomorrow. You got to hold me to it. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Back tomorrow here at Churchill Downs for the Wednesday get-together with Sid and Dick Powell and more. Seth. Day one recap of the sale and a lot of other hijinks. Mercurial hijinks. Thanks, everybody. Replay 6 to 9 here on SiriusXM. And at the website later as well. Talk to you tomorrow.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America.